Tabard In, y'all, a weekly podcast about the stories we tell and the events we discuss while in pilgrimage as queer Catholics. I'm Patrick Flores, an out, gay, married man trying to make it in a closeted church.
And I'm his husband, Jacob Flores, also an out, gay, married man. And coming up on a year of being a full-fledged Catholic, and I'm getting kind of worried.
Yeah. Do you have any some like Lenten practices that you're getting ready for your to close out the year strong as a Catholic?
No, I'm just ready to get smudged, you know.
You're ready for some Lenten smudge?
Yeah, just so you
got,
you know.
You got something on your forehead, Jacob.
I want to make other people wonder why I have a dirty face.
Perfect. That is what we do once a year. Jacob, where are you right now?
Oh, sorry, y'all. I am in Seattle in my mom's car. So we're doing this podcast. I don't want to say bi-coastal, but I'm on the coast and Pat's back home in Central Texas.
You make it sound like we're 17-year-olds doing this podcast.
Wait, why?
You're just in your mom's car. You know, come on in.
I don't... The
noise
in the car are perfect for podcasting. When
there we go.
All right, let's get this going, Pat.
All right, so today we've got a special episode that we want to share with y'all. We recorded this a while ago, actually over Christmas. We sat down with Maite and Cynthia. They're the hosts of the queer Latinx podcast, Cabronas y Chingonas. We were in Dallas for Christmas and we were able to sit down with them. It was an awesome conversation. Their podcast tackles representation in the media, especially from a queer Latinx perspective. We talked to them about growing up queer in a conservative state, what movies are out there doing representation the right way, finding your way back to religion, and coming out in queer spaces. It was a really great conversation. So we'll share that with you in just a moment. And then, as always, we'll close things out by toasting our most inspiring parts of the week. So we'll share that with you in just a moment. And then, as always, we'll close out by toasting our most inspiring parts of the week. But for now, here is our conversation with Cabronas y Chingonas. Mate e Cynthia, welcome to Tabard Inn. So for our listeners who don't speak Spanish, what does Cabronas y Chingonas mean? And why did y'all choose it for the name of your podcast?
It roughly translates into like bad bitches or like badass bitches, kind of. Cynthia came up with the name.
Yeah, I decided to go with a name that, I don't know, it felt true to me because cabrona is just kind of like... it's slang and also like kind of a cuss word in Spanish.
Yeah.
So both... Cabronas y Chingonas is bleeped out on iTunes, but I just thought it would be a good name because that's been my pet name for my family since I was a little kid.
Okay.
And I didn't know it was a swear word. So, but yeah, I felt like it perfectly described what we wanted to be, who we were, how we felt in our own community that is both queer and Latinx.
Yeah.
How maybe you have to really stand in that. So you have to kind of be a little bit of a mischief, you know, mischievous kind of person. So I liked it.
It's actually, it's bleeped out on iTunes?
Yeah.
Oh, it's wow.
Stars.
I don't see it so much anymore because I do search it sometimes to see what comes up, but it used to do that. It would be like CA and then a bunch of asterisks.
No oh, wow. way. They did that automatically?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
But I think they might have taken it off. I don't see it anymore, but it used to do that.
Hmm. So the Chingonas, do you feel like a lot of Latinx or Latinas are reclaiming that word and kind of making it of their own?
Yeah. It's been reclaimed to the point where now it's kind of cheesy. Like, it's
okay.
Like, everything has to be chingona, everything has to be cabrona, but it's our wave too, so we can't really.
Into the mic.
We can't really, talk down on it. But yeah, it is kind of cheesy now. It's kind of played out.
Yeah.
But it's still who we are, it's still our name, so we're not going to change that. But
yeah,
it's kind of played out. But yes, Latinos they've been reclaiming it since like the 20s. It's a thing.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah. My, one of my good coworkers, ex-colleagues, she is Cuban descent and I got her a little name placard that she keeps at work. That's a very, very bro-y tech startup and she lives up to that. She
oh, we love
is
it.
Just really like, you call me this. And everyone's just like, oh, I don't know what to say. So... But I love it,
that.
Yeah.
We love that. See, she's owning that.
Yeah.
Of the two, I would say like Chinguana is the one that people like generally, because it's like being a Chinguana means you like that's the badass part, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I think in Mexico though, I feel like Chinguana is probably not used so much as like a label, but here, yeah.
Yeah.
Like okay. Wild. Yeah.
Awesome. So why did y'all want to kind of like tackle a little bit more of especially representation in the media, not only just talking about being queer and Latinx?
Well, that was my background.
Okay.
Like I went to film school, and TV and film was the only reason that we became friends pretty much. That's all we would talk about is like films that were gay and stuff like that. And it was years and years of us talking about it online. And they were like, okay, we need to spread the gospel of of the queer film. So that's, I think for me, it was always the intent, like to talk about film and television and representation. And for you, it was always queer and Latinx represent just in general.
In general. Yeah. Cause like there wasn't our inspiration, who we were inspired by, was Latinos Who Lunch. And I'd never really seen or heard of a podcast like that with two like queer dudes just talking about being super gay and super like Latinx. And I don't know, that felt true to me, and I just wanted more of it. I wanted to, there was no Maite and Cynthia, there were no Cabronas y Chingonas, so we had to create that space and give it to ourselves, because where else were we going to get it? So
yeah, definitely.
It didn't exist.
So did you met here in Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you feel like Dallas was a place that kind of prepared you well for kind of these that identity that you feel like you've claimed now of Cabrona y Chingona, or was that something that you feel like you saw elsewhere and realized, oh, that's a piece of me?
I don't know. That's a good question. I like started off in a really like Latinx neighborhood when I was here.
Yeah.
And then I moved to like a predominantly Black neighborhood for like most of my time here. And then I moved back to the Latinx area. So it was kind of a lot of back and forth. The Chingona thing, I think, just kind of came from the people I was hanging out with. I don't know. We were all like very proudly Mexican, very like loudly, proudly Mexican. So I don't know. I think that's where it came from. But I don't know if it's like just a Dallas thing. That's a good question.
I don't know. I don't feel like Dallas ever, I wasn't ever really part of like a Latinx circle in Dallas. Like,
yeah.
Because of this podcast, I've met and gotten Latinx friends. But before that wasn't like a thing. So I think for me, it was part of like reclaiming who I was to myself. Because I think when you're an immigrant and you're not an immigrant, but my mom was an immigrant. And I think when you're born here and you kind of don't belong to the immigrants, you don't belong to the Americans. So you have to create your space. And I never really saw myself reflected in other Latinx people until I just like put myself out there and I defined myself very clearly for me. And what felt comfortable to me and was honest to me only. And then once I started doing that, I realized like, oh, wow, like there is a Latinx community. And I mean, for a lot of time, it was a lot of like shame and like, I don't know, it felt like hurt from like the Latinx community, because like they're the main people that have always like bullied me for being gay or like try to probably fight me because I was gay, you know, because there's a lot of trauma there with my own people. But I felt like I had to like claim that for myself because they didn't claim me. So I had to do it for myself.
I grew up here in Dallas as well. And I feel like I should say like I grew up in the very white suburbs of Dallas. And it even that part, though, it was a very, very straight place. Like I didn't know any gay people in high school. All I knew was it just hated, and there was nothing. So when I finally got to a point where I was ready to kind of embrace that side of me and wanted to kind of explore it and try and understand it, I was like, I'm getting the hell out of here, because I know I can't do it here. Like by that point I knew that there were lots of other gay people in Dallas, but I was just like, I have too much baggage here to be able to do it. And that's why like I went up to Seattle and was able to meet Jacob, was because I just like, there's nothing here that's comfortable for me, that it would be a part of my queer identity, whatever. Even I didn't even understand exactly what that meant at that time, but I was just like, man, I gotta get out of here.
No, yeah, she probably feels that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I hopped around all over Dallas, and I never, even today, like, or not today, but like currently, I was talking to somebody about, like, you know, seeing myself in the future, like starting a family. And I was like, I can't do that in Dallas. Like, even though sometimes I think about coming back home, I live in LA now.
Yeah.
And I still think, like, I wouldn't want to have a family in Texas because we would probably be, I don't know. I think I would be afraid. I think I'd just be live my life afraid here. I don't know.
Yeah.
You do have to, you do feel differently when you're like queer from Texas. Like, you kind of watch your back a little bit more. Mm. I mean, just going out into Debellum, I've like had people like, why are y'all holding hands? Or like big dudes. And I'm like, bro, it's like 12 o'clock at night. I'm trying to like go to jail. I'm trying to get murdered by you, bro. I just want to go home. I'm a businessman. Like, I ain't trying to die tonight. Neither are you, white man who's cussing me out right now for no reason. So it's energy, and it's not good sometimes in Texas. So you got to watch where we are.
I mean, Seattle's a very liberal area, but that's yeah. still stuff. That stuff still goes on. We have a lot of white nationalists that are.
I hear.
Did you know that white nationalists move to places like that just to like start shit? Like, they'll go to Seattle. They're in Berkeley. Mm-hmm. They're like in super liberal towns. They did yeah. some crazy study where they go there on purpose to start shit.
They want
to
rouse the liberals so that mm-hmm. they look like they're being, you know.
Like they're the victims.
Or yeah. Whatever.
They don't do it as much here where they're starting to, right? They don't do it as much because, I mean, they're already running this yeah. place. So what are they fear here? Nothing.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Kind of going back to what we were talking about, it's beautiful. There's a beautiful part of being queer and forging your own community. Because I can agree with you, Maite. Being Filipino and Korean, there's a duality of, like, where do I fit in? And those, I feel like that those two communities should have been the ones that embraced me from the get-go, but they didn't. So I just kind of had to find my way. And I feel like queer communities allow that. And they allow whoever the fuck you are to come in as you are. So there's beauty in that.
Yeah. But you always feel accepted kind of like in this queer place that you have to make.
Exactly.
But yeah, definitely didn't feel that from any of my family members or from like people in general that I met.
Yeah.
Just me and my little three weirdo friends. Did y'all ever feel like that? Well, you said that you did because you.
So growing up Korean, that was like, Koreans are like, if you don't look Korean, then you're not Korean. So that was just like not even a thing for me. But my Filipino side of the family, they were more accepting, but they still kind of looked at me as like, oh, but you're not full Filipino. Even though I did like immerse myself in like Filipino traditional courses where you learn traditional Filipino dances and all that stuff, I still felt like the other, which was kind of tough. But I don't know. I felt like growing up, especially in middle school, elementary school and middle school, I kind of went without an identity. I just was kind of everyone's friend. Hung out with the weirdos, hung out with the preppy kids. But everyone knew that I was gay and no one gave a shit. So I guess maybe I had that working in my favor. but yeah, I was lucky enough to grow up in a very accepting part of the Northwest, I guess. Seven of us were gay guys in high school that were out and no one gave a shit. Two wow. of them became gay porn stars.
Shout out to them. Right?
Yeah, no one cared. People were just like, you do your thing. Like, whatever. So that was cool.
Really cool.
Yeah, that for me, when I like started getting to know a little bit of Jacob's background was kind of unimaginable for me of hearing what that was like. Even after high school, when you were like, yeah, I would just like go up into Seattle with my friends and be in like Capitol Hill and like the gay neighborhood and stuff and feel comfortable in myself and it not be a thing. I was just like, oh God, I was terrified at that age. I was so terrified. Nobody knew.
Oh, that, I mean, everyone goes through that stage, right? Like you're terrified to be there, but then you give it some time.
Yeah.
It's still the only place I feel safe is the gayborhood in Dallas. So probably parts of LA.
I was there last night.
Yeah, shout out to that.
Christmas Day.
You're at the club on Christmas. Hey,
yeah,
you got to do it.
At the bar, I guess. The clubs were closed.
Oh, they were closed in Dallas?
Yeah, I think there was only like, I only saw three open bars last night.
Which one did you go to?
I went to Woody's and JR's. Oh, yeah. Which are typically, like, I avoid those because it's mostly, like, dudes and mostly, like, white dudes.
Yeah.
But they were the only ones that were open, so it was pretty, like, mixed crowd last night.
Okay.
Yeah. Not that mixed, but, like, a little bit.
Yeah.
With a large Latinx population in Texas and like just the South in general, are there gay clubs or gay bars that are kind of like
for Latinos?
A heavy Latinx presence? And
there's one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's two.
There's Havana's, Los Reyes, and then there's another one I can't remember. But
there's the one that's like on Maple or something like
Zippers?
That.
Zippers? I think that's a strip club.
No. That's not on Maple.
Oh, okay.
No, God, what is it called? It's like a Mexican. It's like a Mexican.
Oh, Caliente.
One. Caliente.
Oh, okay. Caliente. I love Caliente.
That one's wild.
Those are like the best like Latinx like hood spots. Like
right by the Jack in the Box.
They're amazing, right?
Oh, that's.
Yeah, it's kind of scary though. It's kind of scary though. Yeah, like one of the last times I went there, someone got shot across the street. Mm. But I still went to the club. You know, I was like, man, I hope they're all right. But I'm gonna go into this club.
You're going now.
It's like that one clip, Bella Noche.
Nope.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, okay.
It says, why weren't you at that party? You should go to that party. Why when y'all was beefing at that wedding? And then they, yeah. Bella Noches, you never seen it?
Mm-mm.
We'll bring it up later. Yeah. We'll find it.
It's an amazing. Yeah, it's kind of like that, but not like that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Very Mexican.
My family, obviously, they're not accepting or nice about anything to do with homosexuality, but I always like found a group of weirdos, and like I went to like two different high schools, and I somehow ended up with like the gay weirdos. in the first school it was like a mixed crowd. There's white people, black people, Latinos, and then the second one, like the whole school was Latino, so it was just Latinos. But yeah, I got lucky. Bunch of gays. Whole bunch of us.
That's good. That's a good feeling.
Oh, so you were talking about there's like a mix of queer folk that you found, like a group of queer kids that you became friends with. Was it like kind of like the artsy eccentric?
I call it them weirdos instead of like the queer group in my first high school, because it was like they were outcasts because, you know, some of us were gay, the other ones were like just super nerdy ROTC kids. Okay. Some of them were like anime nerds. Yeah. Like it was just like anything that was other than the status quo at the school, basically we're all in this group together. And even though they were very different, they were the others, you know? So I ended up in that group, and that's when I was like, oh shit, I think I'm gay.
Was this like freshman year or?
Yeah, it was freshman year. Immediately going into high school, it was like a culture shock. Yeah, it's great. I loved it.
Was there any part of you that, like, kind of growing up, was either intimidated by or hesitant to be around kind of other queer people? Like, because I know for me, I was at a place where, especially kind of like as my family got more and more religious and when I was in high school, I started to become more uncomfortable around even, I didn't know anybody, other high schoolers, but even just people that I saw out in Dallas that were queer, like I started to feel super self-conscious and uncomfortable around people like that. Did you have any of those experiences?
Yeah, there was none around like directly, like in middle school and before that. I didn't know anybody that was gay personally, but I when the first like 5 years of my life, and my dad continued to live in this neighborhood, like right next to the gayborhood here in Texas and here in Dallas, and like there was nothing but like white gay guys everywhere.
Right.
In this apartment complex, in the streets, it was like Latinx immigrants and gay white guys. We all lived in harmony for like 20 years until the Fire Nation attacked.
Yeah, I know what part you're talking about too.
Yeah,
it's nice.
I
live over there.
So I would spend a lot of time there. So they were there, and like Pride Parade, like my parents took me every single year. I didn't know it was a Pride Parade.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that they might have known. I'm not even sure that they knew. They were just like, let's go get some free beads. Yeah. So I got taken every single year.
Yeah.
I think I was maybe like a solid 16 or 17 before I was like, that parade's a gay parade. And I had no idea, but I grew up around like gay men who were like drag queens, but I never talked to them because I was like, or they more like they didn't really talk to us because we were like these little like immigrant children of immigrants who were just walking around like screaming shit in Spanish. Like they just kind of avoided us and vice versa. But yeah, I just never had anybody to I was never not exposed to, but I just, there was nobody to talk to, there was no example of it, you know. To me it was just like that thing that you don't talk about.
Sure.
Oh no, So that's awesome. I never, like, I didn't go to a pride parade until I was, like, 18.
Right.
Because I was, like, I always wanted to go, but I didn't want to get caught. You know? Mm-hmm. I didn't want my mom to know I went to the pride parade. And I didn't want to be, like, I never wore a rainbow. And to this day, it's still something that's kind of weird. Feels weird to me. Just because it's, like, okay, rainbow is cute, but it doesn't define me completely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And plus, like, I don't want everyone to just walk around and be, like, oh, there goes that gay girl. You know? Like, I'm, like, damn, like, I don't need another target on me. But yeah, no, like, I was terrified. Like, yeah. I didn't want to get caught going. I didn't want to get caught. Like, I used to, like, sneak around with girls all the time because I was like, yeah, I don't need to get caught. I don't need that kind of energy. My mom used to, like, she's grown, right? She's a better person now.
Right.
But back in high school, she used to say some stuff that were just, it was homophobic. And I was like, I love you, Mom. I know you're not homophobic, but what you're saying is really like, yo,
yeah.
Now I can't walk out this door looking like this. And I really had to, like, police myself, like, every single day. Like, don't dress like this. Don't try to act like this in front of, like, my mom or, like, adults. Because, you know, adults are cops when you're a kid, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to snitch on you, especially in Texas, you know? You're not following these rules a girl's supposed to follow. Or you're not following the rules that, you know, gender has been taught to them, you know? So it's a really weird thing to do. But, yeah, I just walked around, like, watching my back and always kind of, like, watching how I, like, was perceived by other people. And I still, now I don't give a fuck, but back then it was something I really was like, even at work now, it's like, all right, don't act that gay, like, chill out.
Yeah.
And it's still something I just deal with because I'm trying to stay employed in Texas, you right. know?
I wonder if that, like, maybe it was a good thing for, like, the first, whatever, 13, well, it wasn't a good thing, but for the first 13 years of my life, I didn't know that I was gay, so I had no need to
police yourself.
To act, like, when I was a tomboy my whole life, mm-hmm. I still pretty much am, and, like, never did I feel like weird, like not weird about it. I did feel weird about it. I felt othered about it all the time. But I didn't stop myself because I didn't have that thought in my head. Like, I don't want people to know I'm gay because I didn't know it either. So it was like, I just performed whatever I wanted to perform yeah. as far as gender goes.
That's awesome. I watch my back even now. It's really weird. It's just a thing that stays
stuck with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't act gay. Whatever that is, right? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. So what was, how would you describe kind of church as being a part or not a part of y'all's lives growing up?
I went to Catholic school, like, since I was old enough to go to Catholic school, like, on yeah. Sundays. Actually, yeah. Sunday school, not Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, until I was, like, 15. So, like, pretty much my whole life I was in Sunday school. And then the only reason that I was allowed to stop was because I got a job. Like, I had to, like, convince my mom, and she went on, like, a bit of, not a crusade, but, like, she went and, like, talked to all my aunts, and she's like, you guys got to convince me to make her stay in Sunday school, or, because then it had become Wednesday night, like, because I was do my confirmation.
Yeah.
And I never did it, but, yeah, at that point, I was just, like, mom was like, this is how you confirm that you're a Catholic. I'm like, at that point, I was like, I don't think that I am, though, like, I don't feel this. I'm not feeling the what they preach, you know? But mostly I just didn't want to go, like, cause the school, you know, to me it was school.
Right.
Yeah. But it was like, it's still in my life. You know what I mean? Anytime that, like, somebody passes away, there's, like, the rosary stuff. And, like, there's no way, I don't think that for the rest of my life, I don't think I'll ever, like, not be a part of it, even though I don't necessarily subscribe to it.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like the whole idea of being culturally Catholic.
Yeah.
I definitely am.
Right.
Yeah, there's no avoiding that for sure. I'm driving my mom's car while I'm here in Dallas, and there's, like, a rosary on the, like, I had one in my car too for a long time because she forced me to put it there.
Yeah.
I mean, same. Sunday school, been going since I was little, since I was, like, 7 years old. And it's something I had to come back to, right? Like, I think for a while there, I was, like, mad. I was, like, me and religion. Mm. I was more mad at God than anything. And then, like, I had to, like, come back to it. Because as a child, it's kind of, like, imposed on you. It's something you have to do.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But it's, for me, I'd be lying to myself if I said I didn't feel good and I didn't feel like there really was something out there, right? But for a long time, I kind of questioned that. I think it was, like, 18 to, like, maybe, like, 26. And it's only a couple years ago. I was really, like, questioning, like, what it all meant and, like, how it affected me. But I came back to it because I realized it's something that's important to me, something that I feel. And I don't think I should reject God over a priest, right? Like, that's a man. but God and religion and faith and what I believe is what I believe. My mom's taught us from since we were little that like that's that man, that's a priest, you know, that priest is a man, like God is something higher than that. And she's always taught us to question everything and even religion, question it. And just because one man says it doesn't mean it's right. That's not what, you know, God would say. It's not what Jesus would say. So I had to kind of find my way back to religion, and it's back in my life, and I feel good about it. I feel it makes me happy, and I think if it doesn't make people happy, then I get it. Yeah. But for me, it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Churches can do a lot of damage, especially for queer kids, but it's always nice to hear stories of what you usually say, writing straight with squiggly lines. Is that your...
Oh, yeah, right. You're writing straight with crooked lines.
Crooked
yeah.
lines, there you go. So I grew up in a predominantly Filipino church. It's an international church born in the Philippines, and it's kind of evangelized all over the world. So it's like always 90% Filipinos, and then always that white army dude who married a Filipino lady. You're giving that look like...
Am I the white?
No!
Because I ain't in that church anymore. But, so, most people were like, all the Filipino dudes are very machismo, it's very conservative. Oftentimes, people will correlate similarities or point out similarities between Filipino culture and Chicano culture. So I see a lot of resemblance there. When there were gay guys at church, there was one specifically, pretty effeminate. It was in the choir. And every time he would pass by, people would jokingly say like, oh, there goes Sister so-and-so. They would call him Sister. And it always like, I knew like what that meant, but it always like jabbed me in the stomach and left me feeling weird. But I think he knew that I was gay when I was growing up. I'm pretty sure he knew. And so like he always had that kind of like that auntie feeling, that that kind of like motherly, like take you under my wing kind of vibe, that without having to say it. Was there anyone like that in church for you?
Not that I can remember. No.
Church or like even in the Latinx community?
Somebody that you're kind of like they kind of got you a little bit, like they didn't make you feel like an outsider godparent? At least.
Do you have a fairly gay godparent?
Oh my god.
I did.
You should talk about it because I have to think about it.
Think about your person. Yeah. I know my person. Shout out to Nettie. She's like this Latinx, she's like a Mexican immigrant, used to work in the kitchen. Her hair was like shaved. She just had like this like fuckboy haircut, and I loved it. And she was like maybe 10-15 years older than me. And she kind of took me under her wing and was like, are you going to come out? Are you going to tell your parents? Mm-hmm. And she's like talking to me, and she's like, I told my parents. They just, you know, they rejected it. But she's like, I have to stand on my own 2 feet. And she's kind of like, the reason I feel the way I feel about myself is because she's like, you know, my queer elder, which I love seeing queer elders because it gives me hope, right? I'm going to live. I'm going to be able to like survive and be in love and stuff. But yeah, shout out Nettie. She taught me that I was perfectly fine being who I was, and that like I wasn't fooling anyone. I was still gay as hell, and everyone could tell. And I was like, cool. So kind of learned to sit in myself like that. And I mean, shout out to Nettie. She's really like my fairly gay godparent. I love her.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I had somebody that, I mean, he was like a year older than me, right? Like didn't really, I don't think he would count as that exactly, but that's the closest thing that I have, because he very early on, like in our friendship, I met him in like 7th or 8th grade, but he knew like that he was bi, and we became best friends, and it wasn't until then that he told me. But I didn't know any like about myself yet, and he kind of had to tell me like to that about me. Like because I was describing how I was feeling about a girl, and
no, that's him.
this is basically my coming out story to myself, that he kind of grabbed me out of the closet. I was telling him, I was like, I don't know what it is, like this, like I feel these things, and I, you know, I'd never felt them in my life. And then he's like, oh yeah, you're in love with her. You and gay. I was like no. And then I was like, oh shit, yeah. And then so he was, I guess maybe that, because he would be open about it. He would tell his family. He would like date men and women, and like just, you know, at a very young age. And I guess that would be the one, like, where when people would talk about him or, like, question him, like, because I wasn't out, like, I'd be like, oh, man, like, you know, I'd get very defensive. I've always been really defensive. Well, not always, but since that moment, I was very defensive whenever my family would say homophobic things. But never because of myself. I'd be like, because my best friend, you know.
You can't be on your best friend.
Don't talk about him like that.
Did he help you kind of prepare to talk to your family about yourself at all?
No, I didn't. I haven't told, like, everybody. I just told my mom and, like, my brother.
Yeah.
For the most part. No, I don't think anything could have prepared me. It wasn't until I was, like, 20, I don't know, whenever. The day that gay marriage got legalized.
Yeah.
Was when I texted my mom and, like, told her I can get married now.
Right.
And that's it. That was the first time that I came out to somebody in my family. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know that he prepared me to come out to myself.
Yeah. That's good.
Which is, like, the most important part.
Yeah. I would have never, I don't know. Maybe I would have eventually, but it would have been taking me so long to realize that I was gay as hell.
Most people in, like, my church kind of, like, reinforced gender roles and, like, women wear dresses, men do this. Yeah. And it was like, yeah, no one in church, like, ever helped me. Like, yeah, it's okay. You don't have to be just like us, right?
So right.
It's been the opposite from church. That's why it took so long to come back.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the same guy was, like, he's a very, pretty devout Catholic. The same person that inspired me. Like, I don't know if this is probably not the most Catholic thing to do, but he tattooed a rosary around his neck.
Yes.
Like, pretty sure they would say no, but he's like,
definitely
fuck
not.
It,
you're
you know?
Not supposed to wear a necklace on your neck, but
he tattooed it on himself. Like, I don't know. He's very devout Catholic too. So
yeah, I got my son who goes on right now.
I feel like I love faith tattoos, especially Catholicism, anything that has to do with Catholicism. Mm-hmm.
The iconography is iconic. It's just it's amazing.
Beautiful. Like, it is, you know, kind of messed up, the whole history of it. But the story itself is cool. So you're like, I feel that.
Yeah.
As long as we repent for all the colonialism that the church did. Hopefully. Or we could just forget about those dudes that did it.
I don't claim them. Personally, I don't claim them. Because, my people got colonized too, so smart people.
So what advice do y'all have for folks coming out into QPOC communities?
Ooh, that's a heavy one. I would say, for people that, I think you kind of know when it's okay to do it. Like, it's an instinct, or at least it was for me. Like, I knew that it was best for me to hold on for a while if I didn't want to completely, like, blow up my relationship with my mom or whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
There's kind of an instinct there. And I'm not saying that's always going to be right, but, like, if you have, like, if you really don't want to do it and it just scares you that much, like, it's okay for you to, like, you know, hold off a bit and wait, you know. I don't like it when people pressure other people to come out.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
So.
Safety is definitely most important. And it's always different. It's nuanced. It's different for every individual. Mm-hmm. So when you came out, were you kind of gauging, like, the harmony that was going on inside the household? Like, oh, like, things are kind of chill right now. It's a safe time to come out.
Well, I had moved out already.
Okay.
So that was as safe as I was going to get because it was like me not living with my mom changed everything for the better because we no longer had conflict. Like, because, it was as simple as that. It removed the element of us living together and we just got along way better. So I'd been moving out. I'd been out for a while. And I think had I still been living with her and she would still be seeing me as this little kid or whatever, it would have been different.
I feel like that's it's tough for POC, especially brown and Asian families, because there's that strong familial duty to, like, stay at home for as long as possible. And they always, like, look at you as, like, their baby. And so when that dynamic shifts, it creates, like, a whole new rift. But how about you?
I think I came out for, like, selfish reasons. I was just kind of, like, going through a breakup and, like, I didn't know what to do. I was just really, really in a bad place. And so I just felt like I needed to talk about it because I felt like if I didn't, like, I don't know if I'd be here. I don't know. Like, it was rough. It was a rough time. So, like, I had to let feelings out. And so I had to tell my mom. I was like, hey, I just got dumped. This is what happened. And she just kind of, like, held me and embraced me. And it was really chill and relaxed at that point. Hmm. But, yeah, you do go based off the harmony. There was harmony already. Me and my mom were already starting to heal our wounds because we have a bunch. But I think me and her were in a better place than I was maybe when I was 18, 19. And I wanted to really come out, but I went out to college, came back, moved back in, and I really worked on that relationship. There was harmony, so I did it, and it was cool. I don't think at 18 I would have had the same response.
Did y'all have any, like, Tias that you were, like, the fun Tias that you felt like you could come out to, or...?
Yeah, there was my drunk Tia. Like,
the best.
My drunk Tia in Mexico. I actually came out to my, like, cousin when I was very drunk. I was, like, 4 bottles of wine in. And it was, like, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, and I came out to my little cousin, and I felt safe there. But my Tias, I don't know, they acted a little funny there for a couple years with me. So, okay. And I forgive them. I don't care. They don't, whatever. Yeah. Right. People are going to be who they're going to be, and you can forgive them or you can, you know, completely cut them off. So I don't mind. I have no problem cutting off my theos that are homophobic or anyone that's homophobic. Mm-hmm. They getting cut off quick. Cause I don't deal with that anymore. I'm too old for that BS. But yeah, no, there, I think, I didn't give my family enough credit. Like, my grandma grew up, like, sewing for, like, the trans community in Mexico.
Oh, nice.
Like, she would sew their dresses and, like, you know, they're self-employed women. They were taking care of themselves in the streets in 1950s Mexico, so you can imagine what they did.
Yeah.
There was a lot of shame associated with that. Yeah. But now I look at it, I look at my grandma differently, and I'm like, okay, so you got to see humans. And you got to treat humans as such.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a basic thing, but it goes a long way. So I just shout out to my grandma, who kind of sucked, but kind of was awesome. So shout out to her for sewing for the trans community.
Mm-hmm. So we've actually got a surprising number of priests and folks that are kind of involved in a kind of formal way in the Catholic Church that listen to this podcast. We've talked about kind of especially some... you know, what they can do better kind of from our perspective as guys, but as queer POC women that have grown up, at least grown up in the church, like what advice can you give them for, like, cause they've got young girls that are in their parishes right now. Like what can they know? What can they do better based off of some of y'all's experiences growing up here?
They're already doing the right thing by listening to y'all. That's step one. That's incredible and amazing and wild. Like, shout out to them. I wish I was going up in their churches. Maybe to kind of express that, like, Jesus loves us, like, for real, like, everyone, not just who they pick exclusively. It's not a choosy party there. I think God loves us all, and I think maybe if they can spread that message and not spread more hate, not spread more division among Catholics, you know, like, yeah, we're queer, but we still believe in God, and we still believe in these traditions, and we still value them. It's really what they say, and if they say homophobic stuff, that just hurts, you know, because you feel rejected by this thing that you love, and it's hard when if you hear some of that stuff growing up. It makes you question your religion, it makes you question God, and then that person has to make that choice whether they're going to come back or not, regardless of all the hate that's being spewed at church, which is the one place you don't want it. Right. You just want love there.
Right.
So it's hard. As long as they, you know, aren't homophobic, it should be really easy. They don't exclude queer people out of trans people, all of us out of something. They include us if they have, like, maybe safe spaces for queer people to come in and worship in a small chapel together, start like a queer Catholic group after mass or something, have everybody get together. That would be cool.
Yeah, for me, it boils down to safety, because I think it's one thing to, like, not be homophobic and not do, like, homophobic things or preach homophobic things. Like, that's great, wonderful, step one. But then there's, like, but, like, I don't know, I guess to me it's like, are you making it known that they're safe here, or are you just, like, not attacking them? Because to me, being neutral sometimes can be dangerous, and that's, I don't know, that's what's tough for me, because it's like, if somebody, you know, does use the Bible against gay people, even if it's not somebody at the head of the church. Like, if it's just somebody attending, you know what I mean? Like, is anybody going to shut that down?
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that's where it gets tough, because I do know that there's, even here in Dallas, there are Catholic churches, like predominantly Spanish speaking ones, even, who have members who are completely like not homophobic. They're wonderful people, but it's like, I know that there's still like a lurking homophobia there. Mm-hmm. Like, right. just from knowing people that are a part of that community. So it's like, I don't know, how like forthcoming are you about it?
Yeah.
Like, when it comes down to it, are you going to step in front of
your ally?
Are you going to, yeah.
My mom used to go to these like Sunday groups, like a Sunday church thing, not a church thing. It was like a Bible study. Mm-hmm. And the priest was always saying homophobic stuff. And my mom was like, oh no, honey, not today. We're not doing it. So she had to stop going, because she said every single time she would get in an argument with him and be like, nah, bro. Jesus didn't say to hate gay people, bro. So she had to do, well, she didn't say it like that, right? But she,
no,
was,
she said it verbatim.
She said it like verbatim. That. My 70-year-old Mexican mother called someone bro. No, but yeah, she had to stop going because she would get into fights with the priest about that.
And that's showing up right there, I feel
like. Oh, yeah. My mom's about it now.
Yeah.
She's not playing no game. She's like, oh, no, today I'm going to go argue. Excuse me, I have to get my Bible. She's like, somehow this is going to turn about how God didn't like gay people. And she's like, and somehow I'm going to bring out the Bible to prove him wrong. And I was like, shout out, Mom. I see you.
She looks at my grandma calls me every time she gets in or has a discussion with her priest in Grand Rapids, Michigan about gay people. Especially, she loves to tell him how no matter what he says, she's going to like at our wedding, she went up and she like specifically asked him like, hey, my grandson's gay and he's getting married. What do you think I should do? Like, she already had her mind made up, but she wanted to hear him.
We love
it. And he was like, well, what do you think you should do? And she was like, well, I'm going. And he was like, well, I guess that settles it. and then she immediately like got on the phone. She was like, I just want to tell you about the phone call I had.
Yes. Shout out, Grandma.
She also told me that this was one of the very first conversations I had with her after like coming out and everything. And she was like, I don't know, maybe like straight people are wrong and we're all supposed to be gay. And I was like, well,
that's amazing. Oh, my God.
She's
a firecracker for sure.
Weren't they a part of the mafia at one point?
Oh, yeah. That's the Italian part of the family. The Sicilian part of the family in Chicago. For
big
sure.
Personality.
For sure. Wasn't there a thing recently that was in the news about like the mafia formally changed its bias against us, because like the boss's son or daughter was gay,
right?
Or trans?
Boss? No, the boss. One of the boss's sons is a drag queen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the fact that they're like just outright saying like, "Hey,
I'm in the mob."
Yeah,
no homophobia.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was really cool to see. Even though they're the,
I know.
It's still weird.
I wish America would catch up. Shout out to the mob, man.
Could I talk about like a piece of representation that I just recently saw?
Yeah.
So there's a show called Good Trouble. There's a Latinx family in it, kind of as a side thing, but they have, there's a son and a daughter that are mainly in the show. Mainly the son, he's bisexual, and his sister is trans, and they have a whole thing about her. She has a quinceañera, like, I think she's 30 or something. She's older, but she has it because she couldn't have one when she was little.
Oh, wow.
And then the grandfather shows up to the quinceañera and kind of accepts her for who she is. And I just want to say, Good Trouble, like, nailed it.
Good Trouble?
Yeah.
Where's this on? Is it on Netflix or?
It's in a freeform show, but it's on Hulu. Freeform.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And yeah, they killed it with like the Catholicism and the tradition and, yeah, it's beautiful.
All the Latinx baggage being Catholic. And
I honestly, tough. It blew me away.
Tough place to navigate.
Yeah. Okay, so that actually leads really well into, we wanted to talk a little bit about kind of like the overall topic of your podcast and everything. So when it comes to like non-cis white male representation in the media, just overall, why does that matter? Like for like someone in our audience who maybe has never heard someone talk about it as being like, hey, let's talk about representation. Why should they care about that?
Because it's like really affirming, I guess, like seeing yourself in the media. One, it's very like affirming for you as a person, but two, the media has such an influence on like the West, basically, or the world these days because of the internet, that like the way that the media leans, like that's going to be like what decides what progress we make or don't make in these particular communities, or at least it has a really big, I guess, effect on it.
Yeah,
it just matters so much because, like, yeah, I mean, ever since like Latinos have been seeing each other, queer people have been seeing themselves on screen, like, you know, they feel empowered to create their own work, they feel empowered to be themselves, and representation, like, it's just, I don't know, it changes everything. Like, you don't feel like you have to be in the closet, maybe, or you feel like maybe you can be religious, you know what I mean, like, I don't know, whatever right. It is, like, there's positive representation all over the place. And then whenever there's, like, you know, especially before the 2000s, there was a lot of representation with queer people where they would get killed or like something negative would happen, and it was just kind of like, even though I think their intent was like, oh, look at this horrible thing that happened to this gay person, you should feel bad and guilt straight people, it was so harmful for queer people because they're like, this is my destiny,
right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, I just think that it was just important for like our psyche.
Do you feel like those are some of the conversations that are being had out in kind of Los Angeles or these other areas where media is being made? Like, is it starting to break through a little bit?
I like to think that it is, but I also think that it's always amongst marginalized communities. Like, right. Marginalized communities are the ones who are like bringing these things up, or like they like literally have one little thing about you that's not white, cis, male, straight, or whatever, and they're like, let's talk about it immediately. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it kind of is. Is it breaking through to, like, white Hollywood? That's a different question.
Yeah.
I think representation matters because it affects the way we're perceived by everyone, by everyone else. Mm. So if you keep putting out the same story of, say, black men shooting people, then a white person in Nebraska is going to be like, oh, wow, I'm scared of black people. I've never met them. I think they all rob you, you know? Or they're like, oh, wow, Latinx people, they're just dirty migrants that clean houses, and that's just not the truth. That's not the reality of this world. And I think perception matters a lot, because at the end of the day, media is like the biggest American export from like LA, right? From Hollywood, that's their biggest export. So if you go to another country, how are we supposed to like break down these walls if it's the same thing every time? We're being perceived as murderers, we're being perceived as I don't know, someone else's idea of us. And I think that affects how we see each other as well, when we know that TV isn't reality, but a lot of people don't, and a lot of people perceive that as the only truth because people don't read now, and people don't talk to each other, everyone's so closed off in their bubbles. We're all different, but that's not a bad thing, we shouldn't fear it. And I think TV has the ability to maybe break down all those barriers between us if we want to see it, and if we want to see others as full human beings. I think TV has the power to change those perceptions and make it a little bit less violent out there for everybody. Maybe.
Amen. I remember growing up, what I saw in movies and especially TV, like real world representation of Latinos and Asian gay men, were always like the ones with AIDS dying, or the very, very flamboyant ones. And that's what everyone just assumed, that like, oh, that's what you're going to be if you want to be gay. Like, don't be that. And it's like, there's more to being gay than just being flamboyant and being typecasted.
Mm-hmm.
I guess kind of with that, do you feel like, I don't see very much representation of like queer women in media beyond like Ellen, and I don't know, even is Portia de Rossi, would you even consider like a queer
person? I don't think she's ever done anything, roles that are queer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you feel like there's more representation happening in that space?
Oh yeah, there's a ton. Yeah. It's been like the last maybe like 3 years where it's just they're putting them all over the place. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not good at it, but yeah. But they're putting them. Yeah, there's a bunch more.
There's an attempt now.
In television especially. And I think in film they've kind of, you know, they've done okay. It's still like very low,
still, but just always J-Lo and Gina Rodriguez, but hopefully we canceled both of them so many times, I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a bunch now, and then I mean I guess Ellen is kind of, she was just like the first, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't claim Ellen anymore. She can claim herself. She's so wealthy. I don't know. She's gotten a little too weird and too friendly and too moderate. And I think you can't be that right now. And she's too wealthy to see what she's doing. And I think she has a lot of power and she doesn't use it.
She's out of touch a little bit. She's out of touch.
She's way out of touch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's kind of stuck in her persona of like being the fun gal.
Yeah. She's like, oh, I'm not like the other gays. I'm a nice one. I'm not political. And I'm like, if you're not being political right now, honey, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah, like, it's getting rough. So.
Yeah. She wouldn't be where she is if somebody hadn't gotten political. Mm-hmm. You know?
Good point.
It's frustrating.
And yet, here she is being moderate at every chance she can. So it's not working. But shout out to her, I guess, her money.
Do y'all feel like there are some films or shows from outside the U.S. that have in any way kind of helped maybe even better capture some of your own experiences?
I mean, capture my experience? That's a good question. Maybe not mine, but I mean, there's definitely... No, actually, I think those are all pretty much American.
I mean, it's not outside of the U.S. The one that's in the U.S. that, like, no one watches is Mosquita and Mari. And that's, like, the most connected I felt to, like, a movie because it was, like, queer. It was Latinx. Their family members were, like, immigrants. And they were, like, you know, just workers. They were just, I don't know, poor. I felt seen.
Yeah. There's been a couple of novelas in Mexico that recently... kind of had like super lesbian storylines.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
so I guess that counts. It's in Mexico.
Yeah. No, I don't feel seen by millionaires in Mexico, but yeah. It was like, you know, it's a novella, it's make believe, it's Prince Charming.
Yeah, so it's Prince Charming turned into Princess Charming. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that was cool. Still about millionaires, but it was cool. We'll take it.
Yeah, it's mostly American, unfortunately, that I've seen.
Mosquita and Mari, but in Mexico it's gonna be Las Aparicio. What was the show called? Juliantina, that was the ship name, but we don't remember which show it was.
Amor a Muerte.
Yeah, Amor a Muerte was bomb. That was like maybe a year ago in Mexico. Amazing novela. No, and it really did change the conversation in Mexico though.
Yeah.
Like it's showing two white passing femme cis girls. I mean, if that's going to do something good, then I'll take it.
Sure,
you know,
it's a start,
also,
right?
It's a start. And I fuck with the show. I'm not going to lie. We watched it religiously.
Yeah. That would be crazy. I think a lot of Latin America is kind of obsessed with telling those kind of stories where it's like the wealthy people and then like the person that breaks in. So there's that obsession is like still so prominent there. Whereas here we have stories of people from all walks of life.
Sure.
Maybe not as many about us as we want. But yeah, right now it's just that obsession that's gonna hold us back from seeing us because we're not wealthy.
We're not super wealthy. Mi Familia Perfecta, is that American? I know they supposedly
it's Mexican.
It was Mexican.
It was based in Houston for some reason, but it's Mexican.
I think it looked like Miami, but I think they did film in Miami and they said it was Houston. Mm-hmm. That was a good one. It was a Mexican novela. They weren't rich.
But they were like...
They weren't millionaires.
No, but the lesbian storyline in it was like
weak.
Like they wouldn't show them kissing, like anything like that.
You gotta see some hand holding.
Yeah.
Oh.
But it was cute. Yeah. I guess only Latin American. That's all I can think of.
Yeah, same.
Okay.
Yeah.
The UK's done a great job though. They've done a lot of gay stuff. It's just all really white.
Right.
Yeah,
I felt like growing up I always I felt scandalous watching like movies from Canada. Because they would always have the gay guy or they always would have like naked bodies and I was just like, why don't they have this stuff in the U.S.? But
that's so funny.
It's super censored on this side.
Right.
So for any white audience members, if you were to recommend one show or movie to help them see just how incredible queer Latinx representation can be, what should they check out?
That's
Mosquita y Mari's for you.
Mosquita y Mari for me.
And where can they find it?
They can buy it. They should give the director Aurora Guerrero all her money.
Awesome.
It's called Mosquita y Mari with a Y. Look for it on the internet. Just type it in on Google. I think you can buy it on YouTube or something.
Okay.
It was on Hulu. I don't think it is anymore.
It's not on Hulu anymore, but it's like $3.99. It's not bad. And yeah, I think it's the closest representation I'm going to get from who I am.
We interviewed the director of that.
Really?
Oh, nice. She's absolutely the most amazing person. like the advice that she gives filmmakers. In fact, if there's filmmakers listening to this, listen to that thing, and she'll teach you about yourself. Like, she's amazing.
Okay.
Her name's Aurora Guerrero.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Mine would probably be One Day at a Time.
I love One Day at a Time.
You love it.
It's
so good.
You know, it's a sitcom, and I know a lot of people don't like that. The laugh track is real. I was in a couple of those.
Oh, is it real?
It's real.
Laugh.
Yeah.
Her laugh was
I went to those live shows, like, and we live laughed.
Yeah.
Live laughed.
You LOL'd. I LOL'd, yeah. It's a lovely, lovely show. The people are amazing. And yeah, I would recommend that one, because even if it's not like whatever worthy of 1,000 Emmys, I mean, I think it is, but I know other people don't think it is. Like, it's going to lead to another show that is going to get those Emmys.
Not just that, I feel like any kids watching that now, like, I wish I would have had that show when I was like 16 and like trying to figure it out. And I shout out to them making that show for all the little babies that are watching that and feeling better about the way that they are and who they are and where they're from. So
they're just like any other family.
Yeah, yeah. They are. They're healthy, which is not like every other family, but and they're way healthier than a lot of my own stuff. But yeah, it's good.
While we're on movies, so movies and TV can do a really good job in storytelling. Is there any music, any like queer Latinx music artist that you feel like you could just like that you come home to? Pour yourself a glass of wine, or like start slow dancing in front of the mirror by yourself.
Of Latinx and queer, that's tough.
Siempre es sábado, or
siempre es viernes.
Siempre es viernes.
Alexander Anwanted has a really good song. He's an okay fella. He's Chilean, and he has a song about it being Friday in his heart, because Friday is when he can go to the clubs and be with like other queer people and that kind of thing. And it's there's a really cool music video that goes with it too. So that's one, but I wouldn't say that I come home to it, you know.
I like Reina Tropical. They're a queer band, queer like electro indie band from like Cali, from LA, I think. I don't know. I do come home listening to them. They are lit. They have an amazing video where it's like a queer little love story. And it's pretty beautiful, and they're called Reina Tropical. I love them.
Bad Bunny has one song that had Ricky Martin on it, and that one's really lovely. It's called Caro, which means expensive, and that's a really good one. I like it. Has like a tempo change kind of towards the end,
and then you can hear Ricky Martin.
Yeah, and he, like the words that he's saying is like, you know, he's talking about like wanting to just be me. You know what I mean? Like why can't
It's like a really self-empowering song about like defining yourself for yourself and like loving yourself regardless of what someone else has dictated to you. Or it's like saying, I am this, I'm reclaiming who I am, I'm going to be who I am. And it's really a beautiful message, and it's reggaeton, so it's bomb. But how could we forget Juanga?
Oh, Juan Gabriel. So Juan Gabriel is, for those who don't know, he's like an iconic Mexican singer, voice of an angel. And he's always been really flamboyant guy, like very
glitter,
like
sequin,
very
capes.
Famously flamboyant, and like, but everybody loved him, like straight men, macho men, women, every single person in Mexico loved this guy.
Bleach blonde hair?
Yeah, kind of.
Okay. Juanga had black hair, but you would know him because he would wear like the shiniest thing. With like sequin and a cape,
almost like an Elvis cape, almost.
Yeah, okay. He was kind of like Liberace, but like way more like loved by the people.
Okay,
like, there's like the Mexican community where, like she said, you could be the straightest dude, you're gonna play a song, you're gonna think about your mom, you're gonna cry. So Juanga's like legacy in Mexico is something that's so powerful to us too, because they would ask him about his sexuality and he would be like, well, that's not your business. Or like there's a famous saying, lo que se ve no se pregunta, and it says if you see it, then it's, you don't ask it.
Like, yeah, don't ask about what you can see.
Right. Yeah, it's like, don't you see me in a flamboyant, like, you know, sequin shirt and
but he just like never
shoes.
Publicly came out, which was crazy, but everyone knew and everybody loved him.
And
everybody
cared. Yeah, he's
an anomaly.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I love him.
What you see is what you get, kind of thing.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not gonna explain myself to you.
Yeah.
You don't deserve
that. Exactly.
Right.
Shout out to him. We love Juanga.
Maita and Cynthia, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us here at Tabard Inn. Tell our listeners where they can find your work.
We have a website. It's cabronasychingonas.com. We're also on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, at CYC Podcast for Instagram and Twitter. And you can search us through like CYC Pod on Facebook. Yeah, we're on all of those. The website will link you to everything as well. Yeah.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking time to talk to y'all.
Thanks for coming out here. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm glad that we were here at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Only one out of four of us actually
holding it down in Dallas.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the only one. Yeah.
All right. So now that you all know that I am obsessed with Jack in a Box, Pat, what are we toasting this week?
Well, I am going to toast the students who are planning a walkout at Kennedy Catholic High School in Burien, Washington, which is just outside of Seattle, not far from where Jacob is now. They were planning a walkout at the school in support of two teachers who were fired recently for being gay. By the time this podcast airs, the walkout will have actually happened, but the teachers were fired last week, both of them separately, after having gotten engaged separately. And I don't know, it's insane that this still happens, but it just gives me a lot of hope that these students are stepping up and letting the archdiocese, an archdiocese that we love a lot, but letting them know that that's not okay and letting them know how they feel.
Yeah, I'm kind of just to piggyback off of that, I'm really surprised that this is happening in Seattle, the Archdiocese of Seattle. And we've talked about a previous high school in the diocese that has done a walkout as well for the same reason. So it's just a shame that it's happening again. And we are, Seattle Archdiocese is under a new archbishop, so we'll see how that's all going to pan out. But with all that being said, we'll talk about it on another episode. So I hope you all have your favorite drink handy, because I'm going to talk about Seattle again. But
you all should have seen this coming.
I went back home. I'm here right now, but I flew in early Sunday so I could sneak in a little mass at my home parish where I was baptized. And just the love that I was greeted with reminded me so much of why the church means so much to me, regardless of like all this crap that's going on with firing of gay and lesbian teachers. This is the church that I see and I know that is there. So toast to all the people back home in my home parish that continually remind me of just how much the church, how much good the church does. And hopefully we can move forward and make some big changes.
All right. A very Seattle toast this week to the students doing the walkout at Kennedy Catholic and to the parishioners at St. James and their big welcome. We appreciate y'all. All right, y'all, you can support the podcast by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It goes a really long way to help others find our podcast. If you've got any recommendations for someone that we should talk to like we did in this episode, shoot us an email or a DM on social media. We really want to know what y'all would like to hear. That's it for us on Tabard In. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Bye, y'all. Pat, I'll see you soon.
You better get home soon.
Bye.